Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast, Bryce Diamond, post-Burner Boy weekend. Great to see Burner Boy. Great to see the city of Toronto really hold a moment to their hearts, dance the night away. Great to experience that with my friends. Thanks again, Rose Ingrid. Much love to Laura, my guy Chad Cecil from Michigan, a lovely reunion. But yeah, Burner Boy put on a great show. Apparently Saturday night show, which I was at, was better than Sunday's. No knock on Sunday, but it's hard to do two in a row at that level. And it was excellent. You know, every time I go back to the city of Toronto, I get nostalgic. I miss it. There's something very different about Toronto and that the GTA brings to my life now, not just what I remember it to be, but what it's doing, continuing to grow into. And every time to go back and to see the city, you know, elevate from where it was before, it's not a perfect place. I don't think really any place is, just like no individual or group of people are perfect. Not even champions. But it's great to see the city keep growing and keep trying to get better on all kinds of levels. But when it comes out and parties together, it's pretty cool. During the concert, the DJ, Spaceship Billy, and Burner Boy himself, they both recognized the greatness that was a Jamaican icon, who is, of course, Bob Marley. Probably the most famous Jamaican of all time. I think when Usain Bolt was running, he kind of had the world's attention in a similar way to Bob Marley, but I think the legacy of Bob Marley is probably a lot bigger than the legacy of Usain Bolt. And anyways, they both mentioned Bob Marley, and we actually sang near the start of the concert, Burner Boy's concert, we sang One Love as a crowd. Obviously, that's pretty cool because the Jamaican diaspora is so strong in Toronto, and the Caribbean presence in Toronto is massive. And it got me thinking about one of his songs because I had this moment in Port Credit, close to where my parents live, where this massive construction, or what's usually a construction machine, a digging machine that scoops up or carries, you know, dirt or gravel, was on a boat. And I probably have seen this, but it's very rare that I do see this. I don't think I've seen it in Ottawa. But this big machine on this boat was doing something called dredging. And it kind of stirs up the water reminded me, obviously I was reminded of Bob Marley while I was watching this machine dredge, because Bob Marley, of course, one of his big songs is Stir It Up. And here's this machine, like, looking for big items of waste. Could be looking for rocks and trying to remove those items, because where it was dredging is a harbor for lots of boats in port credit. And, you know, in order for the docks to be put in place for the harbor, in order for the boats to be able to move easily, for anchors to be dropped into the water in the harbor, you don't want, you know, garbage, whether it be metals, or you don't want rocks, boulders to be in the water to cause problems for the boats. And so the water gets stirred up at that time. And of course, as I was thinking about all this, I was also thinking about the Toronto Raptors, because, you know, that's where my mind goes. I have very few things on my mind. I've got work when I'm at work. My daughter, my wife, my family are always on my mind. And I think about the Toronto Raptors and my other sporting teams, Kansas City. Have I mentioned that they won the Super Bowl? Yep, back-to-back titles, but we won't get into that because I know many of you aren't Kansas City fans. You're tired of Patrick Mahomes, so I'm not going to talk about that. I'm also an Arsenal fan. I think you guys know that by now. Big Gooner. Shout out to Glebe Central Pub, who hosts many of us Gooners to watch major Arsenal games. So I'll mention them, but I also think a lot about the Toronto Raptors, hence why I have a podcast, because it's easier when I'm around family members after I have a chance to express my thoughts about the Toronto Raptors. So I'm always thinking about the Toronto Raptors as well. Or they're often on my mind. I shouldn't say always. But they're often on my mind. And so I'm seeing this machine dredge in the Port Credit Harbor, removing things, stirring it up, connecting that to Bob Marley, but thinking about the Toronto Raptors. And thinking, wow, the Toronto Raptors have really stirred it up. They've done some dredging of their own, removing some things that just doesn't make sense going forward for a team that's centered around a possible future superstar, a present-day all-star in Scotty Barnes. Whether I thought he should have been there over Jared Allen or Derek White is besides the point. He was an all-star. And I'm very happy for that. I think he's a top 30 guy in the league and was an option for the league to take on. And why not? And he is an all-star, and so we celebrate that. But the Raptors have dredged the team. They have dredged through the contracts of the team that was from last season and the start of this season to make room, to clear the way for the future of the franchise. Not just Scotty, other guys in the team like Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, maybe Bruce Brown, maybe Gary Trent Jr. They've brought in guys who make sense for the Raptors, for Scotty and Emmanuel Quickley in particular, like Kelly Olynyk. And in the first two games after the All-Star break, you know what? It's paid off. It really has. You think about Agbaji, who's now on the team who they got from Utah, a 3-and-D guy. Like a true 3-and-D guy at the small forward spot who can guard 1 through 4 in today's NBA. He guarded Trae Young a few times. He guarded DeJounte Murray. Bojan Bogdanovich was also guarded by Agbaji in this second game against the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. So here you are, Toronto Raptors, after your dredging, after the All-Star break, you're thinking about the future, you're still wanting to compete at a high level. You might make certain subs at certain times so you don't win games, but maybe you're, maybe at this stage you're just looking to win ball games. Let's see what this team can do so that going into the offseason, you have a better understanding, you have a clear picture as to what this team could be and who this team needs. You know what? I really like Jakob Poeltl on this ball club. I really do. Is he who you want in two or three seasons? Probably not. He'll be 30 years old, and you can probably get a guy who's better at 27 or 28 to lift you even higher, to push you deeper in the playoffs. But I like Jakob Poeltl on this team and probably on this team for the next season or two. When I think about Jonte Porter, I like what he can bring to the side. It's too bad that he's injured right now, because I think you'd like to get more games. But Kelly Olynyk is the right guy now. He's the right guy for next season. Grady Dick looked really good, and he has for the last five games. All those G League games really paid off. He needed reps. He needed reps at a level above the college level. He was getting that in the G League, and it's paid off. You know, it's something we talked about, Malachi Flynn missing, and it might have costed him a real role on an NBA team right now. He might, at 24 years old, need to go to Europe for 2 years after this current contract expires so that he can get back into the NBA and be able to be an 8th, 9th, 10th guy. Might not be a playoff team, but he's a real NBA player that can help give some success. And he might have to do that, but he didn't get those reps like Grady Dick got. And obviously Grady Dick is a better player, always had a brighter future than Malachi Flynn did when we drafted him. But we see the importance, right? Nick Nurse was not thinking about that. He was thinking, win now. And that's okay. You're allowed to do that coming off a championship with players on your team like Norm Powell, Pascal Siakam, and Kyle Lowry. You're allowed to do that and skip the idea of G League development. You know, but who it cost, who we hindered the development of, was Precious Achiuwa, Malachi Flynn, and probably a few other guys, maybe Koloko to some extent last season. But you see a guy like Delano Banton, who first played for the Boston Celtics this year, now he plays for Portland, he got those reps in the G League, even in his rookie season and in his second season. And good for him. And maybe, you know, Delano could come back next year and be like a third point guard option. Or if a guy goes down an injury, he becomes your backup point guard because he got those G League reps and now he's getting reps in the pros. Good for him. And he should have got that. That's what the G League's there for. It's for the development of drafted players in their first, second, maybe even third season. There's no harm in that. There's no judgment in that. And now we see Grady Dick, we see the future, we see his arc for the next two or three seasons with the number one squad, with the big boys who play out of Scotiabank Arena 41 games of the season, and beside guys who are all-stars like Scottie Barnes. And that's great, man. Like former champs who are role players in Bruce Bowen. But how about Gary Trent Jr. the last two games? How about Emmanuel Quickley and what he brings to the table. He, whoa. His shooting. His ability to see the floor, his ability to play make. That's really important stuff. And you know, we get a win against Brooklyn at home, very easy win. They look terrible. But we got the win, and it was easy, and it should have been. But then we get a back-to-back. We go on the road against Atlanta, who's in a similar spot to us this year, in a similar spot to us last year. We could have easily been them playing Miami in the 7-8 game in the play-in. We could have easily been that, maybe even better last year. But here we are in a similar place, and we had a brighter future than them, in my opinion. And on top of that, we go into their building. We're trying to chase them down in the playoff for a play-in position on a back-to-back in their building, and we get a win. And it looked great. It was a close game. We've had a lot of close games against them over the last 3-4 seasons, especially in the Scotty Barnes era, the last 3 seasons. I think we lost 4 out of our last 5 against them. And so we have the lead, 6-7 point lead. We need to execute in the final stages of the game. And we get great defense from Scotty Barnes. We get really good-looking rotations with Kelly Olynyk at the 5, stretching the floor with his shot and playmaking. We get Gary, Bruce Brown, Emmanuel Quickley getting significant minutes with R.J. Barrett off the floor, making big shots. Gary made a big one to get us up 5 with 1:45 to go. Scotty made a great pass from the post to the free throw line, extended 3-point line, and Scotty buries it. We get a Kelly Olynyk block. We get a Scotty Barnes block. We get an Emmanuel Quickley disruption in the defensive end. Bruce Brown, you know, really guarding and competing hard to make life difficult, to not allow Trae Young to get to his spots, both on the perimeter and in the lane, where he's such a floating assassin. And we execute really well because we've got these positionless, skillful players who can switch off screens even when they were, you know, hunting for matchups. Yeah, we looked really, really good, and that was fun to watch that team close out a game on the road against a team who, okay, probably wanted to be higher than the 10 seed, but now that they are in the 10 seed, probably don't want to blow a game, especially at home, against a team who's competing for the play-in, like the Raptors. And the Raptors get the win. Tonight, we get Indiana. They just played last night against Dallas. And although it was a very easy win, they won by 22, 133, 111. And they were able to get starters like Halliburton and Pascal rest in the fourth quarter, the last 5-6 minutes. You know, playing back-to-back games is never easy, especially against a team like the Raptors, who's young. In the 5 youngest teams in the league. And who are hungry, who had 2 nights off, right? We played against Atlanta on Friday, and then we get Saturday fully off, Sunday fully off, in a city like Indianapolis that is not particularly alluring, let's just say, to late nights. I might have a nice restaurant to go out to. But remember, speaking of restaurants, Darko Rajakovic has promised the team dinner on him if they win 3 in a row. He said that, I think, 2 months ago. And they might just get it now against one of their old teammates, Pascal Siakam, a couple of Canadians, Benedict Mathurin and Andrew Nembhard, and a team that's beat them up quite a bit over the last 2 seasons. It'll be fun to watch this game. I did watch the fourth quarter of the Brooklyn game. I did watch almost the whole second half against the Hawks with my father, I might add, who's always fun to watch a game with. And all of a sudden, this team is slowly getting us excited about basketball again. It's slowly bringing in some sunshine to a rather cloudy period for the fan base over the last season and a half. And that's cool. And Darko, who is criticized quite a bit in the 9-10 games after the trade season was over, Darko Rajakovic looks pretty good as a coach in his substitutions, his overall principles. He's looking pretty good, guys. I know there was a lot of doom and gloom and a lot of people saying, oh, he's not good enough. Reminder, people who say that online, people who are podcasters, people who write on them, remember, they're not expert coaches. They're not part of, you know, the top 100 coaches in the world at the highest level who are in the NBA. And they certainly aren't even coaching. And for a lot of them, I've never coached. So let's remember that when people are critical, including ourselves. Let's check ourselves. Because it don't look good on us when we make critiques and begin to think, oh, I could do that job. Probably not. Like, if you want to critique Dwayne Casey specifically around his decision-making in games, that's one thing. Because now he's no longer in the league, so you look really smart if you did that 5-6 years ago. But with a guy like Darko, who just got hired, who's been an assistant coach in the league for a long time, but this is his first head coaching job, there's still a learning curve. And he's been doing this coaching thing for an awful long time at the highest level. I think it's been a decade now he's been in the NBA. So let's remind ourselves of that. Not to say that we can't be critical, but just remember when we're critical to the point of wanting him to lose his job because of his abilities, let's remember the levels to this coaching thing. So he's done a nice job. The team has really come together quite nicely. I think Bobby and Masai have done some really nice things, knowing the choice to think of the future and to build, of course, around Scotty Barnes, to make him kind of the hub of the offense, like Jokic or Sabonis, as a big man who can play small ball center to close lineups. He's put some, you know, Bobby and Masai have put some really good players that complement Scotty Barnes' skill set. You know, they've done that nicely. Still a lot of things to do, but in the short period of time that Bobby and Masai did that over the last 3 months, I think they've done a really nice job. And as much critique as I've given them, because I didn't think they needed to blow up, now that they have blown it up, I think it's important that I give respect where respect is due. Bruce Brown, Nuwara, Abaji, Kelly Olynyk, Quickly, Barrett, even Jonte Porter, I think they've done a nice job. And you could even go so far as to say, knowing Scottie's not going to play the five, even the majority of games, nor should he, as an undersized five. That's why we call it small ball. That's why we call him a stretch five or a playmaking five. Those are in closing lineups. And I think Jakob Poeltl is actually a really good five for what Darko wants, because he's a playmaking five as well, although a different one than Scottie. He's just such a cerebral five, and he's got good mobility, right? He's not a huge dude like Embiid, who has elite footwork and skill at that size. But for a guy who's 7 feet tall, he's pretty agile overall, and he's got great hands, a soft touch around the rim, and great vision and passing skills. So I think I would even give them credit going forward for the next year or two. I would even give them credit that Jakob Poeltl is a really nice complementary player to Scottie Barnes. If you're hearing signal noises, yes, I'm driving again. I'm almost at home, hands-free, as I record this episode. But I think they've done a nice job. And when I look at a rebuild, which they have done, and in the short time that they've done it, I'm willing to say that they get a B grade for the rebuild they've done. Obviously, they will be graded even more in the next 2 months, all of next season. But for right now, I think they get a B. I don't know where we can land this year. Is the high point catching the Chicago Bulls in the 9 seed? Might be. But I think if you get in the play-in, you could say, knowing our future is brighter for the next 3-4 years with the roster that we have now, that it's brighter than it was last season when you look at the next 4 years, the season before when you look at the next, when you looked at the next 4 years. I think getting into the play-in would be a success for this season. I think overall you probably still give them a C or C plus, because you could say, well, you could have rebuilded last year in February. You could have rebuilded better, positioned yourself better in the offseason coming into this year with the knowledge, with the fact that you did have Darko. You would have liked to have started with this lineup rather than getting to this lineup. But regardless, I think they get a C plus. If we make the play-in as a report card, as a grade to this season. So that's something to think about. That's something to think about. Again, if we get to the 9 seed, if we got 15, 16 wins after the All-Star break in 27, that's pretty good basketball, that thinking how low we were, 19, right? I think we were 19 and 36 to get, 35, maybe even 36 wins after the All-Star break. 17 and 10, that would be a real victory for all the ups and downs, twists and turns that we've had this year. I'm realizing the time. I got to pick up my daughter from school very soon as my wife's in the office today. But there's one more thing I want to talk about before I call it a pod. The last thing I want to say on the pod, or one of the last things, is I want to talk about J.J. Redick. And I know J.J. Redick has been in the NBA news. He was trending at one point on NBA Twitter. And that's not what I'm going to get into. I'm not going to talk about his relation with Doc Rivers or Austin Rivers' comments or really anybody else's comments in regards to J.J. Redick. But J.J. Redick and the Dunker Spot podcast, Steve and Nikias, they talked about their three teams that they wanted to see coming into this final stretch or final third of the season. And I want to talk about their three teams for a second, and then I'll talk about my three teams. And I sometimes I'll do this where I like piggyback an idea or use an idea that somebody else used. So shout out to them for coming up with the idea. It's a cool one. But let me start with what they said, because I was kind of disappointed, to be honest, especially in one of their picks. But the three teams they had were the Minnesota Timberwolves, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the LA Lakers. Number one, all three of those teams lost their first game coming out of the All-Star break. Number two, the Lakers have lost both games, and so have the Pelicans, I believe. So I think they're a combined like 0-5 or like 1-5 after the All-Star break. So that's one thing. I think that Steve Jones brought up Minnesota Timberwolves because he thought they were important to watch because he wasn't sure about them, and he thought this is the time that they'll prove themselves. If they're really a number one seed, if they're a top team in the West, and it would be competitive, right? Even if they finish fourth, that's a great finish, knowing all the talent and all the firepower that's in the Western Conference. It would be quite a statement to finish in the top four. Certainly a major statement if they finished in the top two. But coming in to the final 26, 27 games, they were number one in the Western Conference. And that's saying something. The New Orleans Pelicans, I kind of feel like this was a pick that they made because maybe there's that Zion Duke connection. Maybe there's like a last hope that they can be a true playoff team. Maybe there's a hope that, you know, you give a little love, I should say, to New Orleans and hope that they can show up and show out for their city. They're not, as a team, an overly successful or experienced team. They've obviously got individual players who played a lot of playoff games. Jonas Valanciunas for the Raptors is one. CJ McCollum, when he played for Portland, is another. But B.I. and Zion really haven't played much playoff basketball. I think they had a play-in game last year that they lost, right, to OKC? I think that's right. And then lost to Minnesota. They played a one playoff series against the Phoenix Suns. That was the year before, and Phoenix beat them in six. They made it competitive, but it wasn't that special, to be honest. So that was a weird pick for me. It's not a bad pick. You're allowed to have like a team that's like deeper in the standings that you want to see do well, and so pay attention to them. But the team that I really didn't like them choosing was the Los Angeles Lakers. Number one, the Los Angeles Lakers were the 9 seed in the West.
the Los Angeles Lakers are always talked about. So if you're supposed, if we're still supposed to be paying attention to team, this is the team to watch. It's a top three team to watch for the last 27 games. You got to give me something that this team is doing that is so different than the other, say, 12 teams, 15 teams battling for playoff position or playoff spots. You got to give me something. Like I had for my power rankings, the Golden State Warriors as my honorable mention. The Los Angeles Lakers, I never talked about. If they did a power rankings, would the Lakers even be in the top 10 for them? I really hope not. But for me, why I was disappointed in it was because it's like, it's the old tired pick. Not just because LeBron's on the team, but it's also Los Angeles. It would kind of be like picking the Miami Heat. Like, we know that they're going to make a playoff run. We know that they're capable of making a playoff run. We know that they'll very much take seriously the final 27, 26 games of the regular season and the playoffs or play in and then playoffs. We know that. So all the other media, traditional media, are talking about this. All the corporations, because it's LA, because it's LeBron, they're all talking about it. Come on, JJ, that's not why we listen to you. Give us something. You know, Minnesota, sure, cool. They're not on people's radar. They're a small market team. New Orleans, same thing. But you don't want to talk about the New York Knicks? If you want to talk about a big market team that would be fun and exciting to watch, you don't want to give us the Knicks? You don't want to give us the other LA team who's playing way better, who's way more exciting, who could make a push for the number one seed in the Western Conference? You don't want to see the Clippers, who are playing much better basketball, who also have two All-Stars, who have the deepest team in the league? That's not the team? I just roll my eyes. I shake my head. I was disappointed. So, in response to those three teams, especially in their last pick, I'm going to pick three teams. Because I have a podcast and I can do that. And I think, you know, we'll probably talk about the Raptors before the season's end. And that's kind of the thing we do on this podcast, is talk about the Raps. I could name the Indiana Pacers, and for all the reasons that are obvious, because I'm a Siakam fan and there's two Canadians on the team, we could do that. I'm not going to go there. They're not my final three. A team that I think is worth watching, and it could be for all the drama, or it could be because they're actually stepping up and playing good basketball. A team who is 2-0 after the All-Star break is a team who has a top three player on it, who have underachieved, who have a new coach, and really are under the microscope. And you hope and might believe that they'll raise their games. But one of my teams, I will say this is my third team to watch for all of us to pay attention to. Again, not because I think they're necessarily going to win, because I think it's just interesting how they'll respond after they went 3-7 going into the All-Star break, is the Milwaukee Bucks. And they showed up. Like, give them mad respect. They came out of the All-Star break, go into Minnesota, control that game, close that game. Good job. Best team in the Western Conference are playing. Boom. Beat them. I think they had a weaker team the next game. Could be wrong about that. I'm trying to remember if it was a beat-up Knicks team because they still have a lot of injuries, or if it was like a Pistons team. Regardless, they won the game. 2-0 Bucks. But I'm going to say they're going to be a team to watch because they're a legit contender. You know, they're not – they're in the power rankings. Their record has them third in the East. I think they're like – sixth or seventh overall, but it's how they respond. They were considered a contender. They were in my four horsemen of the NBA at the start of the season. They're not there anymore. They're not in the top four. But they could react and respond well in these final 25 games to vault themselves back into the top two, back in that two seed, and build momentum going into that playoff. Now, it would be hilarious if they played Miami in the first round. Just saying. It would be pretty damn funny. But the Philadelphia 76ers might slide in that position, and then that would be even a more fun first-round matchup because both franchises need playoff success. They both need playoff success. They do. So I might choose that as my first-round matchup for the Bucks, Sixers, this Philadelphia 76ers. I think that'd be cool. But Philadelphia is the first team I'm going to pick. The second team for me is another Eastern Conference team, and I realize I have an Eastern Conference bias, but in this case, I think this team has just played so good, they deserve our attention as NBA fans, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hot, they were the hottest team in the NBA going into the All-Star break. I think they probably needed a break, and they got one, and probably will take them 3 to 5 games to get them back to where they were before the break. That's just a guess. I think they lost their first game, if I'm not mistaken, after they came back from the All-Star break. That's going to happen. That's okay. They did enough work in the first half that they built a little bit of cushion against the Bucks. If the Bucks come on them hard, I think they were up 2 or 3 games against the Bucks. So they have a little bit of cushion, a little bit of margin for error, and then they could make a push. Even if they finish the 3 seed, that's a very good season, a successful regular season for them. They got to win a playoff series. They have not done that the last 2 seasons. They're going to need to do that. I'm not saying Bickerstaff's job is in question if they don't, but I think it's pretty vital for their confidence and for their belief going forward and probably for the structure of that roster and who to really build it around and who they might have to trade. I wonder if Mitchell and Garland can play together long term. I wonder if Mobley and Allen can play on the same team going forward. Those are questions. Certainly a playoff series win would help answer some of those questions. I think they still will have to deal with the fact that they're not going to be as good as Boston this year or next year. But long term, you could say, okay, in 2 seasons, now everyone's at their prime, Mobley, Garland, Mitchell, and Allen. We've got great peripheral or tertiary players. And now we can, you know, make that full push and get past a team like the Boston Celtics. So this year, though, get a playoff win. But because they played so well in the regular season, I think they're worth watching. So that would be my number 2 team. My number 1 team to watch. I said I wasn't going to put the Indiana Pacers in the top 3. I still won't. A team that I think would be an obvious choice for me because they have a star on their team that I'm very, very biased towards. And they're young and fun and they've overachieved to this point. I could easily say that team is the OKC Thunder. They were my start of the season league pass team. I think I picked Orlando as my second league pass team. I think I picked OKC last year too, but maybe I'm wrong on that. But OKC, regardless, could easily be my pick. And I think they can be mentioned as an honorable mention at the very least. And they'd be in my top 5 like Indiana, but that's bias. The team I think we all need to watch because I think it's going to be these last 27 games are going to tell us whether they're able to truly compete for a championship and not a great playoff contending team, battling, interesting, exciting team like the Phoenix Suns, although they could be really cool to watch too. They're probably my 6th pick in this list. But the team I'm going to pick, who I think could be contenders to dethrone the champs, are a Western Conference team, the Los Angeles Clippers. Their depth is wild. You got Norm Powell coming off the bench yesterday. Paul George was injured, or at least sitting out, and they played Norm Powell. When you can start Norm Powell in replacement to somebody, or when you can have Norm Powell come off the bench, you have Russell Westbrook coming off your bench. Woof, that's a loaded, loaded group. Zubac has also been playing at a high, high level. Obviously, Kawhi was an all-star, former NBA MVP for the finals twice. You have a former MVP, James Harden, who's also on this team. Paul George was at the All-Star game again this year. I mean, this team is very, very loaded. And as we've said on the pod many times, Ty Lue is a top three coach in this league. You put Steve Kerr in that list. You put Eric Spoelstra. I think maybe the fourth guy might be Rick Carlisle. Just knowing that he's won a championship, that he had a perennial power in the Dallas Mavericks for about a decade. And, you know, now he's, you know, lifting or leading an upstart team, an exciting young team who's got a bright future in the Indiana Pacers. Carlisle might be number four. It'd be interesting to say, like, who are the top 10 coaches in the league right now, but I'm not going to do that. But Ty Lue is a top three. He's a top three coach in this league. And I think with his mastermind and with the other guys, the depth and the stars that are on this team, I think they're worth watching. I really, really do. I'll be interested to know who they might get in the buyout. I know they're limited in some of the things they can do because they're in the salary, they're in the luxury tax, sorry. But they might scoop up a guy to add a little more depth, a little more experience, veteran experience. Terrence Mann obviously gives them a lot. Even Coffey coming off the bench has been pretty good. He's been fun. So anyways, look for them. Watch them. If you get a chance to see one team as they try to make the final tweaks, prepare for the playoffs and for a true title run, watch the Los Angeles Clippers. So again, the three teams I have in mind that I think we should pay the most attention to: the Milwaukee Bucks, because of all the possibilities of drama, implosion, or maybe join the Clippers in that kind of title run. That's my number three team. Number two, there's only three teams on this list, Bryce. Number two is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And number one is Los Angeles Clippers. Last thing I want to say to the pod has nothing to do with three teams. Has nothing to do with J.J. Redick. Has nothing to do with the Toronto Raptors. But last episode I was talking about the importance of listening to an episode that Raptors Republic put out on the Rapcast. And they had a guest host, which they had a lot through August and September. And I gave the wrong name. I'm so sorry. He was on our pod, for heaven's sakes. I don't know how I got that wrong. My apologies to Alex Adams, not Alex Smith. He's an Ottawa guy. Alex Adams. Maybe I was thinking about the old quarterback for Kansas City. I had Kansas City on my mind. But my apologies to Alex Adams. If you get a chance to listen to another podcast and you want to focus on the Canadian basketball team, CEO of Basketball Canada, Michael Bartlett, was on the Rapcast with Alex Adams, who's a young journalist just at university. I think he's 24, 25 years old. And he did a lot of things. He covered the team. He was in Indonesia and the Philippines last year to cover Canada basketball when they made their historic run in qualifying for the 2024 Olympics. And he talked with Michael Bartlett about this particular team, who might be on it. And of course, the Olympics themselves and who they might be competing against. And of course, not just the men's team, but the women's team too, who are qualified for the Olympics again. I think this is their fourth or fifth straight Olympics, which is really fun. They've got some WNBA star power, and they've also got some other players who we might not know as much about, but are very good at basketball, and we should be paying attention to them as well. All right, y'all. Hope you're well. Peace in the Middle East. Peace to Palestine. Free Palestine. Peace to Israel. Peace.